Hello and welcome to Season 2 of Music Rewind, a podcast where we look to tell the stories behind our favorite albums. I'm your host, Steve Epley, and in each episode, I will invite a guest on to tell us about their favorite music album, how they discovered it, and what makes it special to them.
We now join our regularly scheduled program, already in progress.
It's one of the good things about festivals of that nature, you know, Lollapalooza, and I'm a big Bonnaroo fan, obviously, but, you know, to where, like, in one day I was able to see at Bonnaroo, Snoop Dogg, Willie Nelson, Kenny Rogers, and Dave Matthews, like, all on different stages and catch them all. And it was just, and Lionel Richie joined Kenny Rogers for that matter. So that was,
Steve, I'm not going to lie. That sounds like hell on earth.
That was fantastic. Later that night was Guar.
We haven't talked about Dave Matthews yet because I know Dan's got about a 4-hour rant in him about Dave Matthews Band. So
a good rant or a bad rant?
You're not a Dave Matthews fan? No? No.
You're going to just wait. Him and my wife, she's like, oh, that one Dave Matthews song? And she says, if a different one comes on, she goes, yeah, it sounds exactly like the last one. She goes, I don't know what the hell the big deal is. I was like, in college, I think it's just a lot of weed in college. Because I was like, yeah, I can be behind these guys. All right.
Wasn't there a movie where it was a comedy that someone like they absolutely hated him in that movie? I can't think of what it is. It was one of those movies that came out like in the early 2000s, and they absolutely hated Dave Matthews in the movie, and he was in it, and he was playing himself. I can't think of which movie it was.
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of it. Like Along Came Polly or something.
Yeah, it was something like that.
It might have been Along Came Polly actually.
Yeah, I did not write down for any bands, artists we forget to mention. One of them definitely was not Dave Matthews Band because I knew Steve, we could start – that could be a whole podcast. That could be like 10 seasons long of him going off about Dave Matthews.
Steve, you were talking before about hearing stuff in the barracks. So for me, it was
– it was big in the barracks.
But like it was – it was like freshman, sophomore year of college, and it was either Dave or jam bands, especially like in the locker room. So like football, you had your Dave and your jam bands, and then you had like hip hop or metal over here. And if I had to hear one more Under the Table and Dreaming, because they only played five songs, it's all the same.
The same song.
I don't
so what you're saying is Ants Marching is your favorite song.
Let's edit this all out. I'll have the DMB guys off my
head. Let me say this. I thought the same thing about Dave Matthews. I did. Just kind of – he was a flash in the pan at the time to me. But then I heard the song Crush by him, and I loved it, which has that like jazzy lounge sort of feel to it. It's got the deep bass line, and it's a different song than the rest of them. And I believe that's on Under the Table and Dreaming in the 90s.
Is it Crush or Crash?
Crush. Not okay, Crash. Not Crash Into Me. No. Crush. It's a good – so it's my
Steve, I'm just saying song. I saw him three times in college, so I do know the Dave Matthews songs. That was the stuff that like in college would be like – you either listen to like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC to like – kind of make out with your girlfriend or Dave Matthews. So I chose Dave.
What brought me into the Dave Matthews fold was the 2-disc acoustic set he did with Tim Meadows. Tim Meadows.
Now that would have been
that shit.
Yeah, now that's the show I want to see.
Yeah, there you go. But no, that with Tim Reynolds, fantastic guitarist, and those two acoustic on stage, that I enjoyed that more than the full band.
I do like that. I'm not gonna lie, I have a lot of his CDs and I did like him a lot. It just when I saw him for the third time, it was the same set list three times. It was the same set list.
Well, I think for me too, it was just every guy like LimeWire and somebody would spend like 15 hours on the computer and be like, oh, I've got this great mix of music for you to hear. And it was like seven different covers of a Dave Matthews song, and I'm like, I don't need to hear him do Dark Side of the Moon. Like, what the fuck, man?
And then we just said Guster and OAR.
I'm not trying to be a Dave, you know, defensive here, but I will say I enjoy hearing 18-minute versions of Two Step. I think that's fantastic. It's a great song.
Like, Two Step my ass right out of this conversation.
Hey, I can't. You know what? Steve, I got to make sure that you have this in here. We'll have Sean Jepson listen to it because Sean's like a diehard like Dave fan. We're just like,
I'm middle of the road. I'm mediocre. He's hardcore. Yeah, I'm not hardcore. I've seen him a couple times, all at Bonnaroo because he always seems to be at Bonnaroo.
I think that's all he plays. And he's from Virginia, but
yeah. I've been to that festival where he's headlined twice in like the same 4-day weekend.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
But I'd rather watch Dave Matthews than like Phil Lesh and Friends or Fish or Widespread Panic. I'll take Dave Matthews over any day.
Fish Live is pretty good. I like Fish. The rest of them, I Fish is as far as I could go. I you know, if once you start to get into like Leftover Salmon and Humphreys McGee and
what was that Mo. Band you were talking Mo. About, Steve, on Bonnaroo? Pigeons Playing Ping Pong is the name of an actual band.
Yeah. Like what the?
That was then, a Chillicothe festival, by the way. It was,
yeah. Oh, because the pumpkins are playing.
Summer, yeah.
The crap DMV bands like OAR and.
Hey, whoa, no, come on.
It was a crazy game of poker.
OAR is a really good band.
What? How? As a cover, they're like a college cover rock band. Like
I've seen them several times, and every time, great show. I didn't have any 20-minute, you know, bass solos while their lead singer played PlayStation, like Tool.
Yeah.
OAR puts on a fantastic show in every venue they play. Even if a 3-minute song turns into 20, that's amazing. I will defend OAR up until they're pop stars.
It's like the World Series of Poker that song goes on for too long.
All right, so I got one question here, real quick, Steve. I got one question. So I'm gonna name a state and name your favorite '90s band from this state. All right, so I'm gonna call on one person to kind of do it. So it's a little bit different. So I'm gonna start with Danny, Georgia. Any genre?
Oh man!
Oh Daniel, this should be only one of two bands
from the '90s from yep. Georgia.
Yep.
I'm drawing a blank on who the hell's from Georgia.
You gave me the drummer's book.
Oh, the Black Crows?
No. Crows are from Georgia.
Are they? Athens, right?
Yeah. Yes, they're from – no, actually from Atlanta.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. R.E.M.'s from Athens.
R.E.M.
Yeah. I don't consider R.E.M. a 90s band.
No, so I'm not sure I don't either. That's
you're more 80s,
half
right?
Of them.
I definitely say the Black Crows.
Okay.
Black Crows from Atlanta.
Right. That's fair.
For 90s. I'm hesitating because I think
like Outkast, but they are kind of like the end.
I was just going to say Outkast because I think like AT Aliens and some of those records, like Rosa Parks when they first hit,
yep,
was early to mid 90s, but I'll have to go with Black Crowes.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. All right, Mike, let me see here. I'm going to give you.
I've been thinking in my head like the states. I'm like,
that was tough, man.
Let's go right.
Montana.
Let's go.
I could cheat with that
Texas.
One.
Let's go Texas. There's not a ton, so this was going to be a little tough, I think.
No, well,
I know who you're going to say, Michael, the Toadies.
I should, right? Yeah, I mean, you know who else is from Texas is Pantera.
This is true.
One of my favorite bands from Texas is Spoon, but their first record wasn't until the 2000s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, honestly. I know that there's more, and I'm just not thinking of them right now. But
this is a question.
I would have to. I mean, because I'll probably kick myself in the ass for forgetting a band that was from there. But yeah, I mean, the Toadies, man, those guys were. One of my questions is like my last one is like, or is what is your first concert? And that was the first show I went to.
Nice.
I remember we all had the T-shirts on the next day because we were 15. And like like a couple of dorks, like, oh, we went to we all went down to Peoria to go see a concert. But yeah, I'll say them, and then I'm gonna come back and be like, fuck, I forgot these guys.
All right, Mr. Apple, I'm gonna go with If I went Washington, that'd be too easy because there's a ton from Seattle. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do California either. That makes it too easy too. I'm going to go New York.
New York. I don't have the in-depth state knowledge that Mike and Danny have. But you know, based on my recent exploration into different genres, I'm going to go with DMX.
Ooh.
I mean, and I'm not nice. Not trying to show favor to the question answer here. Just I really enjoyed that album you brought to the table earlier, and I recommend anyone to go listen to it that hasn't. But because it was a lot deeper than just Rough Riders Anthem. You know, that's,
I agree.
It was really good. Yeah, and I have listened to more after that. There's, as Dom mentioned, there's some Manson. Marilyn Manson later on, mm-hmm. And there's
the
collaborations
Omen
in there. So, I'll go with DMX.
How do you guys feel about Manson, anyways? But we haven't touched on that. I know. I guess he's
Beautiful nice. People's a great song to lift weights to. I'm sorry, it is. I think Beautiful People just that whole song is dark, and I love it.
There's a short EP out there called Remix and Repent, with almost a dance mix of Beautiful People, but not really. It's still a metal song. And there's Tourniquet on there. There's a couple others, but it's
Tourniquet's
that like six track EP is better than, to me, any full album he's put out.
Mm.
It just, cause
I always think about Kyle. With
Kyle
Manson.
Kyle loved Marilyn Manson, but there's so much filler in all those albums. There'll be like three listenable tracks, and then the rest is just shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my opinion. And the listenable tracks are good. I enjoy Beautiful People. I enjoy, Sweet Dreams and others. The Dope Show was terrible. But Beautiful People, Antichrist Superstar, that's the name of the album. There are some great tracks on there, but there's just so much filler. So much of the shock rock, I'm trying to be weird, rather than just make a good album.
Turns out he is kind of weird, to say the least.
Are we surprised that he was like a bad guy, though? I mean,
no,
no.
What did we expect? No. Like, oh, I heard he went to church every Sunday, and like,
helped old ladies across
the street. Yeah, look at Alice Cooper. I mean, the guy's like a high handicap golfer, and the nicest dude you could meet.
Christian now, yeah.
My uncle golfed with him in Arizona when he lived there.
Oh yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. I just want to throw a little curveball out there because, I mean, I was thinking about it, obviously artists come from all over the world and all over the country. And, I was like, let me throw this one out there. See if I can shock you guys. Danny, you got a little quiet on the Marilyn Manson one. No love for Manson?
No, I never really got into him. I do the Beautiful People. I do like that song a lot.
Yeah.
To me, it was all like the Ozfest, all those types of band like that. I just never got into a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I went sort of more mainstream rock, and then kind of dug deep into some older bands around that time and stuff. It just wasn't to me. Like I know what he was trying to do, and I liked what he was trying to do, but I could find that what I liked better was like the harder stuff from metal, like Slayer, what those guys were doing. And then, you had the Pantera stuff, the 90s stuff. So to me, that was more interesting than the sort of the shock rock of what he was trying to do. I just didn't like it, to be honest with you. It wasn't interesting to me at all what he was doing. And that was just my personal preference.
I think to me the theatrics were there to try to overshadow the lack of musical, talent, I guess.
Yeah, it was pretty. The music itself is very simple. Like it's almost like punkish, like because it's so like a couple chords, really. I mean, it's not. Like Beautiful People, I can rock that. I get behind that and a couple other jams, but I just remember there were some people in high school that like always had the Marilyn Manson shirts on, and like you're like, okay, and you have to have more clothes than this because
I think to me too, what was kind of, cause it was, you know, was it metal? Was it sort of the industrial stuff? And to me, like a lot of what we were talking about Nine Inch Nails before, a lot of what Trent was doing at the time was so much more interesting to me, you know, like the Downward Spiral, obviously, but the record before that, like Pretty Hate Machine and that side of stuff. So to me, the music for Manson didn't have that same gravity as sort of like what those guys, what like Trent was doing and some of those other bands. So it didn't
click with me. Their first couple records?
I don't know much about them, to be honest with you.
I thought he might have, and like I read something that when they were making the one with Beautiful People, that even Trent Reznor was like, "All right, you guys are just doing like way too much drugs. Like it's time to like pump the brakes here, guys." Like,
did we?
I don't know. I can't remember where I read that from, but
did we ever ask the question of your guilty pleasure song? Was that asked?
We have not got there yet.
No.
Well, I want to ask a question though. So. This is one of my first ones. What's your favorite song that was a cover or one that you didn't realize was a cover?
I can answer that.
Go for it.
Real quick. I had no idea who Patti Smith was when I was a kid. And, but the 10,000 Maniacs, Because the Night on their Unplugged.
Oh, that's a good song. Yeah.
Was to me, to this day, I was like, man, it's so, like, I can still remember seeing it as like a kid, like coming on, and it was just like a beautiful like arrangement and everything they did.
Natalie Merchant, right?
Yeah, Natalie Merchant, yeah. And it was just, and then like to this day, I'm like, and I know Patti Smith wrote the song. She's a great songwriter, but I don't know, that to me is just the better version in my mind.
Yeah, that's a great track. I've got that one. I downloaded it specifically because I remember that was such a good song. For me, I put The Man That Sold the World, Nirvana. I did not know that was a cover. I wasn't deep into Bowie's catalog at the time. I just knew that was a damn good song.
Yeah, I didn't know it either, honestly. And then because my parents were not big Bowie people. So I got into Bowie like later than, you know, usually you get so much stuff that your parents play and they just didn't like my mom and my dad, which is going to sound crazy. They do not like David Bowie and they do not like Tom Petty, which my dad loves the Traveling Wilburys, but Tom Petty was like the main Wilbury.
Full Moon Fever is like Wilburys Volume 2, the mystery volume. I mean,
I agree.
That's
weird. I got to go back to Black Crowes. I didn't know for the longest time that Hard to Handle was an Otis Redding song until way after it was popular. I just thought it was their first single. And we had Otis Redding's Greatest Hits in our house, but it didn't have that song on it. And that was really all I knew about Otis Redding, to be honest with you. It was just a blind spot for me. And then went back. Obviously, somebody was like, "You're pretty dumb. This is a very famous Otis Redding song." But for a while, I had no idea.
Dude, he had some bangers. Otis Redding had some bangers. He had a lot of really good music and stuff
just
appreciate it.
Normally, when your first hit's a cover, your career is doomed. So,
this is true.
Unless you're Limp Bizkit and you do Faith, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, just think. Black Crowes and Limp Bizkit, they're the same band, if you think about it now.
Stop yourself.
Yeah, what? No. there's the sound bite.
For me, I'm going to say Ugees. Softly with his song.
Nice.
Roberta Flack. Right,
Roberta Flack.
Yeah,
that was strong.
Mm-hmm. The song was huge.
To be honest with you, it was their version. I enjoyed it more than I did the original.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, we brought up too Whitney Houston with I Will Always Love You and Dolly Parton.
Absolutely.
Another one for me too is Nothing Compares to You, Sinead O'Connor. I didn't realize that Prince had written it and had given it to another band to record before, and then she came out with her version of it. So I didn't know it was recorded. Yeah, it was oh man, you're gonna put me on the spot. I think it was the name of the band is like The Fight.
I think you're right. Was it the Time?
The Family.
The Family.
It was The Family. Yeah,
The Family. The Family.
And I know Prince, I know he recorded a version of it. I don't know if he did it after Sinead made it big, but The Family.
I thought he did it before.
It's his song. He could have done whatever, but again, coming out, I had no idea.
It was like a B-side. It was like on the second half of the album type of thing.
Prince could do no wrong with me. There's nothing he could do wrong musically. One of my favorite artists of all time. I actually put Prince ahead of Michael Jackson.
I'll do that too.
I love Prince.
Purple Rain is probably one of the great sign of the times.
I mean, when you're able to do the whole record every single instrument on your own album and sing and just put it all together, you know, it's become a verb, you know, Prince style. Whether you're, you know, Dave Grohl did their first album, Prince style.
Yes. We talked about him writing Nothing Compares to You, but like all of the songs he's written, not only for himself, but for other people, you know, the Bangles first
Manic Monday.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit.
Have you watched the movie Purple Rain recently?
I haven't seen it in a long time. My guess is it doesn't hold up.
it's a time in a bottle, man. It's a snapshot. It's so bad, but you just can't look away. And then intercut with some outstanding music performances from him and Morris Day, and it's his, like, he gets in an argument with his father. And he does a full, like, military about face on his heel, like, spins and walks away. Like, Exactly. But he does it with such, you know, I hate you, father, you know, sort of way. It's just.
Oh. Would you like to go out, play basketball, and then I'll make pancakes?
First you must bathe in the healing waters of Lake Minnetonka. Oh.
That was a good game. I wish I could say the same.
Blouses, bitch.
Then he made his pancakes. I don't know what happened to Dom there.
I don't know. He's crossing guys over.
Blouses. What a bitch.
They were doing all those screens.
I'm telling him if he can join, we'll finish up.
Yeah, we only got a handful left.
Several of my bands we forgot to mention have been actually crossed out because they're bands that I didn't mention up above in my earlier answers. Ace of Base. That's the only one that wasn't touched on.
I saw the sun. I was like, I'm looking at my list and they're very, very indie.
I know when I listen to this, there's so many bands that I didn't mention that I wanted to.
Ugh. I mean, just thinking about, you know, if I take myself back to the garage, I mean, there's just like a stack of CDs in Hank's garage that first went in there would, you know, play something. And then it was really kind of a, you know, free for all, whoever wanted to put a CD on, but it was always something different next time around, you know, whether you got like the Oz Man Cometh was a mainstay there. Ozzy put out that Greatest Hits in sometime in like 97 or so, but on there you had those great backtracks that had, you know, Zakk Wylde or Jake E. Lee and Randy Rhoads playing guitar on them. And they were just, it's like, what the hell is this? This is great. this isn't War Pigs only. You know, this is Ozzy solo and stuff that we never heard before.
Yeah.
Belle Biv DeVoe. Never mentioned that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess we could like I have In Vogue written down as a guilty pleasure, right there.
I don't know. I like that song. I don't have anything down for guilty pleasure because I'm like, I like these songs. Yeah.
Well, I guess it would be like, to me, it'd be like Britney and Christina. Like to me, like they were like not like when they first came out and like, every song got played to death. Like they annoyed the crap out of me. But now I'm like. Yeah, I can, you know, get behind, Salt and Pepper and, like, In Vogue or...
Salt and Pepper, dude. Don't put them in the same category as like, Britney.
Just kind of like one-hit wonder... Not one-hit wonders, but, like, stuff I didn't listen to, like, super poppy stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's as poppy, like, to me.
I listened to a lot of the poppy stuff in the early 90s. At LAD, you know, before high school. Before I was, my horizons were broadened, you know, I had Vanilla Ice. I had Snow. I had the Boys to Men albums. You know, I had all that shitty shit. And, it wasn't until high school where I'd start to learn more about good rock music.
Yeah. I think if we just start naming stuff from like the Y Dances or the Peru Washington.
Exactly. Dances, we could, the dance.
That alone.
Mr. Big, you know.
Just to be the next to
or Damn Yankees when Ted Nugent deflects the bullet with his guitar.
Such a great video. That's one one of my recent ones that I did. We started talking about the Damn Yankees and how I actually watched that High Enough video on Pop Up Video VH1. It's hilarious because it's you got Tommy Shaw from Styx singing all serious, and then there'll be an arrow incoming Ted, and here comes Ted Nugent from the side, like just explosion. He comes out, does a guitar solo, and leaves.
But I tell you, when he at the end of the video, I always tell Marissa, I was like, and that right, this is the part he comes out and deflects the bullets with his gun, with his guitar. And she's like, what? I go, it's the most ridiculous video in the world, and it's the 90s.
I bought that album, Monster Ballads.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was great.
Had all the from the 90s.
Oh, Extreme.
Extreme was on there.
Is that 80s or is that 90s? See, I get those late 80s.
Yeah, that's tough. I don't.
Actually, Skid Row is 1990.
Yeah, Slave to Grind is a very underrated record. I think that's 91. Yeah.
Queensryche, Warrant.
Operation Mindcrime.
Slaughter.
Silent Lucidity, yeah.
But that's 80s, isn't it?
No, Silent Lucidity is 90.
Yeah. Really?
Fly to the Angels is from 92.
Slaughter.
Girl, you got to fly. Yes. More than words, man. Extreme. Angels.
Remember Stabbing Westward?
Yeah, you know, the reason why they're called Stabbing Westward is they got together on the campus of Western Illinois University. So when I was they were still, they had flyers and people were like, I saw them before. They hated it. And that's why they named their band Stabbing Westward. Yeah. What was their single or what was their song?
They had two. One was Without You, which is what pops into my mind, but they had a bigger one that I can't think of.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm looking it up.
They were with that next wave of bands like Seven Mary Three.
Fuel. What do I have to do?
What do I have to do to rip?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that was out. To make that came you out.
Understand, now tell me.
That actually came out in 94. I thought that came out later.
Wow.
I thought that was like later high school.
Spacehog? Remember Spacehog?
Yeah. In the meantime.
Yeah. Maybe in the meantime. That's a great song.
They opened up when we went. Didn't they open up for Black Crowes and Oasis?
They did.
Yeah. I think we caught the end of it. But
Black Crowes was on with Oasis?
Yeah, it was called the Brotherly Love Tour because both brothers.
The Robinsons and the Gallaghers?
Yeah. Very clever. I mean, you got to give them that. Yeah. They're very clever about it. Yeah, I have a show that they played at Tinley. I think that was like 2000.
Yeah, it had
2001? Because we could, I thought we could drink.
Well, we did. I don't know if we were legally.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. I get that confused with the Lollapalooza from 2003.
The Donnas, Audio Slave.
Yeah. The Audio Slave, that show, that was, those are two bands we haven't really talked about at all yet, is Soundgarden and Rage Against the Machine.
But this has got to be 10 hours, dude. We're already on, what, hour five?
There's so much good music in the 90s, you just get overwhelmed.
Yes. Right? Thank you, Dom.
Mike, what was it you played before our football games in the locker room?
Oh, that was Rage Against the Machine. That Bulls was
Bulls Evil on Empire. Parade. Evil Empire is the name of the record.
Yeah, that was came out in 96, so yeah, right then.
It would be Injustice for All and then Evil Empire.
Yeah, yep. That was the first time I heard tracks from those two albums was in the locker room.
I mean, the fact that he does that with a guitar is, to me, it's amazing. Like, now, the effects, the way he works effects pedals, and, you know, Libertyville's finest, Tom Morello, you know, what's he got, a doctorate or master's in, like, history from Harvard? Like,
oh, really?
So this guy, I mean, when you say, like, you want to argue a guy about, like, politics or history, it's not a guy you want to go up against, for sure. I mean, but the way he could manipulate that guitar to make it sound like a turntable was amazing to me. I mean, that is definitely, I know they're on tour this year. I mean, I really got to want to try to get to see at least one of the shows in the Midwest for sure. Cause I've never seen them, and just, I'd love to, I guess I saw Audio Slave, you know, it was Rage without, you know, Zach, exactly. But, it, yeah, just phenomenal.
So is Rage touring again then?
Yeah. Another? I think they got two shows in Chicago and then one up in Alpine.
Okay.
Yeah, but when you talk about cornerstone records of the 90s, that first, the self-titled and then Evil Empire.
Yeah.
Just like sledgehammers.
I didn't realize they had one before Evil Empire.
Oh, yeah, the first one. The cover of it is from the Vietnam War with the Buddhist monk who lit himself on fire. That famous picture. That's the cover of the record. Like... These guys weren't messing around when they came out,
so,
right?
So you're saying they're trying to make a statement?
A little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
They're raging against the machine, if you will, Steve.
All right. So who else haven't we mentioned? What are some, do I want to do honorable mentions or do you want to go through this quick fire stuff? We'll do quick fire. All right.
Yeah.
Danny, Oasis or Blur?
Oasis.
Mike?
Yeah, this is Oasis.
Oasis all day long.
Yeah. Song is a great song, but that's about it.
I didn't know there was this big rivalry until I watched a Netflix documentary on it.
Yeah. It's huge in England, man.
Yeah. They both released like their stuff on the same day and all kinds of craziness. But yeah, Oasis was just, to me, the better band. Pearl Jam or Nirvana? A little more context on that one.
This is terrible. This is Sophie's choice right here. How do you choose?
Yeah, it's pretty low down, man. You don't put those two bands against one another. You don't ever pit them against one another.
No.
Hey, Mike came up with these. This is not me.
And honestly, like I told, like, because I kind of gave my answer like to my wife tonight, and she's like, I can't believe this is who you pick. And I have to say Nirvana, just because I just think about like when the records came out. So like in 91, I think Nevermind's Better Than 10. And then in 94, right? 93 when, what was it? 94 that In Utero came out. Was it 94?
I think it's 93.
End of 93.
Yeah. And Rearview Mirror or Versus is a better, like it's my favorite record, but I still think like In Utero is a better written record, I guess. And a lot of people don't. And their Unplugged is better than Pearl Jam's, obviously. I mean, their Unplugged is like the most, you know, the most popular Unplugged possibly of all time. Like it's, you know, people have t-shirts of it still and like, you know, posters on their wall. But now, obviously, we would have never known what happened. You know, I don't know what would happen to them. But you know, you tell me, you know, later in 98 when I'm going to see Pearl Jam the first time, then that's different. It's a different band, you know, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I got to go the same. It's Nirvana for me, even though Pearl Jam is still one of my all-time favorite bands. It's just, I think for me, it's not only the cultural aspect, Michael, that you were talking about, but just personally, they were sort of the gateway or my first band that was mine. That wasn't coming from like my parents' record collection or, you know, a cousin's, you know, older friends or cousins saying, oh, you should listen to this. It was sort of that first band that, and even being young, when Nirvana hits, you know, 10, 11 years old, but it was sort of the first, it was my quote unquote band. And it was, it led me down the gateway of, finding bands or embracing bands like Pearl Jam and all the other 90s sort of alternative stuff. And then just from just putting the two together, it's like Michael, like you said, it's, you don't know what happened if Cobain lives and, you know, there's bad records, but just in, I'll go with the two releases from the 90s, just Nevermind and In Utero are just, to me, are head and shoulders above anything that Pearl Jam put out at that time or any time, just from a songwriting perspective. And I think that's just a testament to Cobain's genius as a songwriter. I think it's a testament to those three guys, is their chemistry together. And I say that as a diehard Pearl Jam fan. So, but yeah, to me, it's Nirvana.
Yeah. I think I mentioned that in my podcast with Steve. It's the same thing. You know, it was definitely like our band, like it was our time for music. That wasn't our parents for sure. You could even say that about like Dr. Dre and the Chronic, really. I mean,
what about you, Dom?
All right. So I equate this discussion, although I think Mike's question was, you know, super disrespectful to the Pearl Jam because, you know, it's just,
I've seen him 20 times. No,
but you put him against like you know, when you think of alternative music, you think of Nirvana, it's like synonymous, right? But I'll say this.
Right.
I equate this discussion to like, you know, where hip hop heads will say, well, who's the best rapper alive or who's the best rapper? Right. And, you know, people say Biggie, some people say Tupac. And then there's a contingency also says Jay-Z. Right. And when you look over the career of Jay-Z and the career of Pearl Jam, it's synonymous. Right. They've had the longevity. They've been relevant through multiple decades and, you know, great quality music, great music period. So you kind of have it there. But then there's like with Nirvana, you have that Biggie and Tupac effect, right? Like, what if, you know, there's no, you know, Kurt Cobain death? What if the band stays together and there, you know, ultimately is no, damn, I can't think of the band Dave started after.
Foo Fighter.
Yep, there you go. I should know that because he just got, you know, inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year. So shame on me. But nonetheless, so I will go Nirvana. I will say Nirvana just because of the what if aspect of it. I think for the 90s, especially that first, you know, first half, if not, you know, heading into that second half, latter half, for sure, they dominated, you know, the music genre in its entirety. I think Pearl Jam gave you some good music in there, you know, as well. But I think when you compare the albums, kind of like when Mike shared, you know, album from album, you know, record writing for record, you know, writing for writing. You have to give that nod to Nirvana. And then there's that, you know, the kind of like the what if that kind of sits in the back of your mind and makes you think, well, if they would have been able to, you know, if they would have made it through the 90s, they probably would have continued to give us that high quality. So I'll go Nirvana. It was a long answer, but that's mine. That's what I'm sticking to.
I'm going to go against the grain and go Pearl Jam. And the reason being, and again, it's not fair because obviously the band ended for obvious reasons so early. But I just think musically and vocally, I prefer Pearl Jam better. I like the guitar playing in Pearl Jam, and I like Eddie Vedder's vocals, which is a weird statement for me to say, honestly, now that I think about it, because sometimes I can't understand what he's saying. But that's here and there. I just whether it's down the road, you know, you've got, you know, Ledbetter and Last Kiss and other types of songs that are not kind of what you're expecting from them. But I like listening to Pearl Jam more than I like listening to Nirvana. I mean, it's that's what it boils down to for me.
And I just have to put this on the record. This is like picking your favorite child. This is just a ridiculous pairing. Shouldn't be a debate.
If you think about it, it's kind of like who's your favorite sprinter versus who's your favorite like marathon runner, because Pearl Jam to me is like, okay, they can't be Nirvana in a sprint, but Nirvana's not gonna, you know, they'll be done by the, you know, the fourth, fifth mile. So because they have the longer career, they have the more damn more
it's
albums.
Not fair.
Yeah.
It's not fair.
They'll give
at
you
all.
A 5K. They'll give you a 5K, whereas Pearl Jam's going. They're going the whole 26.2. Absolutely. I agree.
What's crazy about it, too, though, is there's, you know, you have bands, and I think this is kind of a weird way to look at it. I'll give myself that. But Pearl Jam, you can kind of see their influences, right? They're classic rock based, they're blues based. There's bands that have sounded like them since. You could make that argument with Nirvana, but I don't think anyone has done it since. And I think that speaks to the testament of how original they were and how, when you hear those opening chords, Dom, you had mentioned it before, how it, you're coming at it a little bit later than I was or Michael or Steve were. And you're coming at it with, you know, a different, you said cultural and you know, music background. But still, when you heard those first chords of Smells Like Teen Spirit and then the song played on, it hit you. It was electric for you. And I think that was the difference for me, is that I love Pearl Jam. They're my favorite band. You know, I've seen them 20 times with Michael. But there's just something about the magic of those three guys and of Kurt and his songwriting. I think that can't be surpassed. And I think it's, you know, it's arguing Mantle versus Ruth or, you know, whatever, Jordan versus Kobe or James or whatever. Greatness was achieved by both, but I think it was just, for me, it was just everything that Nirvana had represented, the window that, or the door it opened for me in my life and the impact it made on my life. And then, but just that, like you said, if you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit now, I get the same reaction almost that I did. And I know it's counter to what I was saying before about it being overplayed, but I get the same reaction I did almost when I heard it the first time, because it's one of those songs that stands the test of time. And it's, I don't even think it's anywhere near their best song. So I think that's also a testament to sort of what they had in only three records.
Yeah. I agree with when you hear the opening guitar riff, that it's, like that's something that like pulls you back. And I can still remember watching that. And then, but I like Jeremy and like Even Flown Alive don't really, they're great songs and I mean, I love them, but that, man, that opening riff of that, of Nevermind or of Smells Like Teen Spirit is, yeah. And it, honestly, like if you think about it, like track one, song one, like one of the greatest opening songs to an album of all time.
Yeah, I could go with that.
Even John Cusack said it.
All right, well, let's go to the next one. Big Ear Tupac. You guys know mine. I'm sticking with Tupac.
Well, I think if we're gonna foreshadow what this answer was, mine is Biggie. I just think he's a better rapper. To me, I think he flows better. And honestly, there's some. Tupac's always kind of rubbed me the wrong way ever since. Like, I remember reading something about when he was in Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson and like wouldn't do like an STD test or something. And it just, something about him just rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know what it was, but I don't know. I always like Big. Granted, everything you said about, you know, like Tupac had Dre and Snoop, you know, on his corner, and like Biggie had Mace and Puff Daddy. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, but think about like that he pulled those two guys up like to make them, you know, relevant, really. I mean, Mace got one good song, you know, he's not a bad rapper, but you know, I don't know. I just think Biggie was always, in my mind, just a better rapper.
Very compelling, Mike. That's a very good argument. I have to say, and I grew up a Tupac fan, and I love Tupac. I think Biggie was the more talented artist. I kind of look at like Shaq. Like if you look at, if you think about NBA basketball, you think about the best center of all time, right? A lot of people say, you know, you have Wilt, you have Shaq, and you have Kareem. Kareem obviously has the accolades and this, you know, a lot of the stats. So is Wilt as well. But Wilt played in the, you know, the generation and era where he was just so dominant, no one else could compete with him. But then you have Shaq, who was like really the most dominant basketball player we've probably ever seen play. But he was lazy. And I kind of equate Biggie to like that same kind of same, and not saying Biggie was lazy, but his body of work was so much more limited. But I do think he was definitely eons more talented than Tupac. I think Tupac was a superb songwriter, and obviously he worked on his craft and honed his craft. You know, guy died, and it was music, new music was coming from him like 10 to 15 years after he died, which is amazing. It just tells you how, you know, hard the guy really worked. But pure, you know, pure rapping ability, I say Biggie was more talented.
Yeah, I got to agree with that. I think it's Biggie for me, just what you guys hit on, the flow. I like the way he flows. His rhymes, like, to me, when I think of both of them, like, I know I love Tupac, and his raps are fantastic, but ultimately for me, I hear the beats and the music more. For me, with Tupac songs, and it's the opposite with Biggie. I know the beats and stuff, but to me, I like it more for how he's flowing and sort of what he's rapping about. So, yeah, for me, it's Biggie. But that, again, that's a tough choice.
Which child do you love more?
Listen, who put these questions together? Come
Thanks,
on.
Mike.
The real question is, why did Dom leave out Luke Longley in the best centers of all time?
Wait, the Bulls had a center? I was no, there's a center on
you
that
should
team.
Know Will Perdue?
Yeah, Horace Grant.
Bill Cartwright, come on. Michael never played with a center.
Jack Haley?
All right. Next one is, what's your 90s guilty pleasure? And this whole question is, you know, what's something that's going to be in your playlist that you probably won't, you know, normally mention to all your friends?
I'm shameless. I'll mention it all. I don't care.
You mean Garth Brooks shameless?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know if this is really, I guess at the time it was a guilty pleasure. I don't think it's so much of a guilty pleasure now, but I definitely wasn't advertising, but when Waterfalls, and I mean not Waterfalls, but when No Scrubs came out from TLC, I had the cassette single. I would switch that out with like Injustice for All and and some stuff. I love that song. No Scrubs is my guilty pleasure, man. I like TLC.
Yeah, I think a lot of my guilty pleasure stuff was stuff that like we weren't supposed to listen to because we liked rock music and like hardcore rap. So like anytime like a pop song that was like interesting, or honestly, I was probably going to be something I'd bring up for an artist for later was, but like as a guy who's supposed to just like Pearl Jam and Radiohead. You know, I just watched her documentary last night on about Alanis Morissette, and honestly, Jagged Little Pill is a great record. And
I just saw her in concert doing the Jagged Little Pill tour.
I mean, like for a guy who's just supposed to like, you know, meathead rock, I guess not meathead rock, but like rock. You know, her stuff is. I mean, she's a hell of a songwriter. Like, really, that those first two records in the States were pretty well written. Not her Debbie Gibson stuff that like when she was in Canada.
I'm good. Jagged Little Pill is a great record,
but it wasn't like hip like to be a guy in the 90s to say you liked like women like artists, and that was like I think the way they pushed music back then. It was like, all right, well, you're not supposed to listen to like a woman singer or something. It'd be dumb like that, but that's kind of what
I just. My guilty was singing along to No Scrubs as a 16, 17 year old who didn't have lunch money. And they're three women talking about living at home with your mama and not having bus fare. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have that, but I'm singing along with you. I feel your lady's pain.
For me, it's a single that I still listen to because I love the song. But it's a duet with Elton John and George Michael. Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me.
Nice.
Elton John listened to a ton of his stuff. Saw him in concert, great. George Michael, not so much. Not really a guy I followed in the '80s, whatever. But that their version of that song, fantastic. Those two guys belted out, really good.
Interesting.
I just keep checking. I can see my living room from this other room. And I must have said Nirvana Unplugged too loud because now my wife is watching Nirvana Unplugged. I can hear her, like she's got it cranked too. I can hear like we're at Come As You Are, so she's only a couple songs into the thing. But
Dom, you got a guilty pleasure over there?
I do. So. And I think I share with you, Steve, that, you know, obviously I was an Army brat. I grew up a little bit everywhere. So I lived in Anchorage, Alaska from 92 to 95, just shy of 96. No hip hop stations up there on the radio. So we had to listen to pop stations. So I got, that's when I really got so really well versed in pop music, pop and, you know, rock, alternative, the whole nine. Ace of Base was it's my guilty pleasure. All That You Want. Absolutely love this.
It's another baby.
It's terrible. It's cheesy. It's lame as hell, but I love the freaking song. You know,
Valley Pool music.
And you know, and let me tell you what made it even better is there was a bear in Alaska, the Alaska Zoo, named Binky the Bear. And on when Animals Attack 3, Binky attacked a tourist. He was like from Europe or somewhere, I think. Europe or Russia, I can't remember. Anyway, she climbed over a fence rail. They told her, you're not supposed to do it, obviously. And she's like, oh, I want to get a picture closer to the polar bear. Well, Binky got her ass and bit the lady's leg and, like, was mauling her or whatever. And they made a song on the radio, like, all that Binky wants is another tourist that he can bite their damn legs off or something like that. So it made me appreciate the Ace of Base song even more. But if you go on Google, I'm sure if you find When Animals Attack 3, Binky the Bear, you will find a picture of this lady. And so... I love that song just because, well, I love this. The song was, like I said, cheesy and terrible, but and it's catchy. I think it was the number one song. But yeah, that's my perfect pleasure. All That You Want.
Now forever, whenever you hear that song, I'm thinking of a lady being mauled by a bear. Not where I thought that was going. I love it.
So who'd we leave out? What bands didn't get a mention?
So many. Oh my gosh. Left a lot out.
Like Jeff Buckley.
Oh, Jeff Buckley, Grace. That record is just absolutely so great. Yeah. It has a cover on it that I didn't know at the time, Hallelujah, which was a Leonard Cohen song.
Yeah, you know what? That would have been a good one too.
I didn't know at the time. Everclear, their Sparkle and Everclear. Fade record. I really like that record a lot.
Santa Monica on there, yeah.
Yeah, Heroin Girl.
Pale Green Stars. I always liked that one.
That was on there, yeah.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one of my personal favorites, which is Eagles' Hell Freezes Over in 94. I know I'm alone, maybe alone in this, but that was a personal musical highlight for me when they did that particular album, Reunited, just for me.
Just for you.
Beck, I heard you mention Beck.
Beck, Third Eye Blind.
Yeah.
The first two Third Eye Blinds, my opinion. And then, but Beck, like, I tell my wife, I'm like, yeah, his name's Beck Hansen. He's the oldest Hansen brother. She's like, no. I'm like, no, he's no, not at all. I was like,
well, you mentioned him before, Michael, but like Buffalo Tom. Yeah. Their album Big Red Letter Day is a great record. I don't know. There's so many like bands. Matthew Sweet. If you guys don't know Matthew Sweet, his girlfriend record or Altered Beast. Yeah. Highly recommend those. Even bands like that we talked about, but like Soul Asylum, You know, they
Soul Asylum. Yeah, I forgot about them.
I still
Counting Crows.
Counting Crows. Yeah. Counting Crows.
What about Creep by Radiohead?
And Radiohead, I don't know if you heard that, because that was the one that in my mind was overplayed, just because I'm a big OK Computer guy, and like Pablo Honey is. There's a great check out. It's just, if you type in like Radiohead support group on YouTube, and it's fantastic. It's these guys talking about oh, I wish they would just make music like the Benz and OK Computer again. They're playing all this stuff, and the guy at the end's like, oh, I would love it if they would just play Pablo Honey, huh? And like the whole like support group like stops and was like, out.
So. I will say that talking about Radiohead, the Benz, you just mentioned the Benz. I think for me, it's my favorite, and obviously I get kicked out of the support group, but for me, the Benz is my favorite Radiohead album. Just a great straight ahead.
Only Pablo Honey you get kicked out.
Okay. I was going to say, just a great straight-ahead rock album.
Yeah, Radiohead is...
I would recommend In Rainbows. So it's
yeah, good. In Rainbows is a very good record.
But and there's so many bands, like Dinosaur Jr.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Soundgarden at all, Soundgarden. Which is travesty, because they...
Alice in Chains.
Yep.
Alice in Chains.
I mean, I said the Four Horsemen, but like we didn't really sit and talk about them. And it's amazing now that Eddie's the only one on that...
Yeah,
Mount Rushmore that's still alive.
I did mention him a little bit earlier, but if just because he just passed, the lead singer just passed, but Mark Lanegan, the Screaming Trees, their last two records, Sweet Oblivion and Dust, are great. And then he's got some solo records. So his first solo record, I think, is 90 or 91. And that's actually he does a cover with Kurt Cobain and Chris Novoselic on it of Where Did You Sleep Last Night? The Lead Belly song that they then cover, bringing it full circle to Nirvana's Unplugged. So Kurt and Mark were friends, and they were going to put a blues project together and couldn't get shit together, but they ended up recording this song. But I recommend, the name of the record is The Winding Wheel, but definitely worth checking that out.
TLC. We completely glossed over TLC.
I tried with No Scrubs, Dom.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, it was his guilty pleasure.
But just everything, they just had, TLC ran the 90s, and you know, they had a very strong run. Very strong run. It was just unfortunate that they weren't getting paid at all. I mean, they probably could have gave us a lot more better music had they been, you know, making a little more cash.
So I'm looking at the top 10s by year, the Hot 100 Billboard list, has very, very little rock on here.
It's like there's probably very little stuff that we would.
Yeah, I mean, in 91, EMS Unbelievable made the number six. And in 92, you've got Under the Bridge from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
We didn't even talk about Blood Sugar Sex Magik.
No, we didn't. But I want to point out, though, that in 94, Ace of Base had three of the top tens.
Dom, Ace of Base didn't mess around.
We got to listen to Dom more, you guys. Dom, I'm looking forward to your Ace of Base episode coming up later in season 2.
I will make it happen.
TLC had two in 95 with Creep and Waterfalls.
Oh, Waterfalls was that was a deep
Waterfalls
video.
That's
remember the video? Yes,
yeah. Was speaking of like a deep video? Was Everlast? Was that 99? The cat from House of Pain.
We never mentioned House of Pain at all for Jump. I mean, that's an amazing track.
Well, you have a ton of those songs like that, like The Jump, the Montel Jordan, This Is How We Do It. Like those are
Who let the dogs out?
Craig Mack.
We could do a Jock Jams episode.
Yeah, Jock Jams. Yeah, exactly.
There we go. Jock Jams.
And Jock Jams had all these songs on it. Yeah. Quad City DJs in there.
The Train.
Does anybody remember the Space Jam?
Oh yeah,
come on,
yes.
Welcome to the Space Jam.
Was that Technotronic?
No,
sorry, Technotronic was Technotronic was on the Ninja Turtle soundtrack.
That was Pump Up the Jam. With Vanilla Ice,
they had Move This and Pump Up the Jam. Yeah,
you gotta move.
Sheryl Crow. All I Want to Do.
Oh. You missed, you definitely missed Steve before talking
that's
about
Steve's
it.
That's Steve's favorite song.
That, that was my song that is overplayed and never to be played again.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I get it. They played the hell out of that one. I remember, again, I think I was 93, I was in Anchorage. And I would say in the mix, every seventh song, that was they were playing that song.
Probably there's a lot of Jewel. Oh,
it's Fiona Apple.
Jewel, yeah. They were huge.
Criminal.
Yeah. Criminal, yeah.
That's great.
Here's that the top three. So here's the top three from 1992. Number three is Jump from Crisscross. Number two is Baby Got Back, Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Seattle. See, we're bringing it all back to Seattle.
Yeah, Seattle.
Number
right
one is End of the Road, Boyz II Men.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't even talk about Motown Philly.
No, not at all.
ABC, BVD, the East Coast Family. Mm-hmm.
Never missed a beat.
92 did have Color Me Bad in the top 10, though.
That's good. Speaking of Seattle and Sir Mix-a-Lot, because Sir Mix-a-Lot used to tour or play with these guys, the President of the United States of America.
Oh, yeah.
Lump and Peaches.
That's a great album.
Peaches.
That one album is really good.
And they played like the two-string bass and the three-string guitar.
Oh, man.
They were goofy but fun.
We haven't talked like live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that Nicky Hiderman's brother was the lead singer?
Yeah.
Cole, I think.
Season two of Music Rewind has a live Throwing Copper episode. It's a good one. We talk about that album up and down.
Do you talk about they're the reason that like people blame like Pearl Jam for Creed, but it's really live is the issue? Because he has that holier than thou like.
There was definitely a lot more spirituality than I expected in that album. But what's funny is when you look at the videos for live, the first one, Throwing the Drama, not Throwing the Drama, but Something the Drama, Selling the Drama, that's it. They look like Pearl Jam in the video. Lead singer's got long hair. He's got like a little Eddie Vedder hat. They got flannel.
Before he shaved the head
and then
and left the rat tail.
And then in Eye Alone, he's got the rat tail with the shaved head, completely different look. But that first video, they are trying to make them look like Pearl Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Standing alone while in a forest looking all solemn while singing their lyrics. They're trying to make them look it.
Like Primus, they had the Pork Soda record, My Name is Mud.
Yep. Hey, without them, you don't have South Park's theme song.
This is true.
So, you know?
I did find a list that lists like the top 50 Rolling Stones top 50 songs of the 90s. What do you got? Oh, obviously we know it landed at number one. Like we all had to get.
Smells like.
Yeah, exactly.
Oops, Baby, One More Time.
So what do you think finished up number two?
I would say Oops, Baby, One More Time.
Okay, strong one. Mike, Danny, what you got?
Is it by quality or by just like sales?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what they don't list what the criteria is.
It's Rolling Stone, you said?
I'm assuming popularity is going to probably be in there.
So I would say something by the Backstreet Boys.
Oh, okay. Pretty close. Maybe.
What's that Mariah Carey Boyz II Men song that they did together?
Oh, yeah. It's a good song, too. What are you talking about?
I guess that's not
Jackson.
It.
That was a Jackson 5 song.
You have the remake.
No, was that was from One Sweet Day. That's it.
Yep, which was a very good vocal song. But no. Not Rolling Stones number two? Blackstreet. No Digging.
Ooh.
Whoa. I like the way you work it.
That's it.
Wow. Did we that like Genuine?
No love for Genuine. Pony didn't make the list.
Pony? What about Rex and Effect?
Effect is in effect, and I'm the wrecker.
All these came up today on that playlist. It's so funny that we were talking about.
What was the cop movie with Michael Keaton as like the police chief, and all he spoke in was TLC lyrics?
Oh,
The Other Guys, right?
Yes,
is that The Other Guys?
Yeah,
that's such a subtle, hilarious joke that is. It made the movie for me.
I think TLC is the theme of this episode, guys.
No. TLC and Mariah Carey.
I cannot speak highly enough about Mariah Carey's Unplugged. When she sings, I'll Be There. It's beautiful.
You're your one-man hype machine over there, buddy.
I agree. But we were like coming into this thing. It's like, well, you know, we'll talk about NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys as a joke. And then it's like Mariah Carey and TLC.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a
hearing it by heart when I'm with you. When we broke apart,
I can feel the frosted tips in my I can feel the pain of frost in my hair and my skull.
Ain't no lie.
Yeah, I love it.
Just like my last roundtable, I'm going to steal the pitch moment for myself. You can help support Music Rewind by joining our Patreon. Patrons already have access to future episodes before they are publicly available. Finished episodes make their way up there as soon as I finish editing them and get them on there. Please take a moment to give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, Good Pods, or wherever you are listening. And lastly, please feel free to check out our sister podcast, Cinema Decon, where we deconstruct and overthink the great classic movies of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. Gentlemen, it has been a pleasure to talk to you about all things 90s music. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. It was a good time. Hey, don't worry. The podcast empire will continue, and eventually you get me and Danny roped into doing one.
I think the name of your podcast should be Get Off My Lawn.
No, please. Thanks for having us, Steve.
Absolutely.
This was fun.
Absolutely. It was fun. Danny and Mike, it's a pleasure to meet you guys all. Meet the both of you, I should say, virtually.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
I have to say I'm definitely impressed by your robust music knowledge.
We had nothing else to do. Growing up.
No, it'll be cool. Hopefully all four of us can get together sometime.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
The request has been thrown out there to do some more bonus episodes like this, where maybe not like this with a 3-hour talk of just broad 90s music, but a playlist specific one where, you know, let's, you know, we're going to do a playlist of our 10 favorite acoustic tracks. Mm-hmm. What's your playlist for your 10 love songs? You know, something like that. Maybe get some,
fucking Steve. I don't have enough tabs in that Excel document that I need more now to, you're going to be making, I'm going to be.
So you're saying you don't want to be a part
of that?
One. Always. Is this a list? Steve, I have a 50-tab Excel document that I sent you, for Christ's sake.
This calls for a spreadsheet.
Oh my God.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you again for listening to Music Rewind. And as I always say, listen to the full album. Until next time.
A podcast from the Sidereal Media Group. Back to you, anchors.